That's good. That's good. Hour three of First Up, brought to you by Lease Busters, God's Plan. 20 fingers pointing, poking fun at Mitch Marner and the comment he made yesterday about being viewed as gods in the city of Toronto. I told 20 fingers he should play What If God Was One of Us. You know that song? What if God was one of us? Yeah, great song. But God's Plan was good too.
Who's the girl that sings that?
It's a great song. Great song. I'm going to find that. 1 second. Talk for a moment.
Is it the Canadian? Joanne Osborne?
Joan Osborne, yes.
Oh, okay.
Joanne. It's Joan Osborne. Is she Canadian, Joan Osborne? I don't think so. No, she's from the United States. That's a shame. We'll take her from Kentucky, where the PGA Championship will be taking place in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And, What If God Was One of Us? Man, that's it's a tough comment. And maybe we could play the whole thing, what Mitch Marner was trying to say yesterday, 20 fingers. And it's pretty obvious he wasn't pumping his own tires, talking about how great he is or the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's not at all.
We don't need to beat him down for this comment. Clearly, it was the wrong choice of words to use in this.
Yes, and what Chris Johnson said when he joined us is exactly right. If you want to be critical of Mitch Marner, his play on the ice, totally deserved. Yeah. But Mitch Marner, the man, he's a good dude. He's a good dude, and
he does
a lot of good things for this city.
He is a great human being. He
is.
He really is.
Here's what he said yesterday.
I mean, that'd be a goal. I've expressed my love for this place, this city. Obviously, I've grown up here, so we'll start thinking about that now, and trying to figure something out.
What does it mean to be a Maple Leaf?
It means the world. Obviously, we're looked upon as kind of gods here, to be honest, and something that you really appreciate, and the love that you get here from this fan base and this attention is kind of none like any other. So you saw with the Raps a couple years ago, the love that they still have for a lot of those players that they had to trade off this year, and that's kind of the love you want.
So what Marner's essentially saying there, and I know it was a poor choice of words, is that when you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, you are revered, you were treated extremely well by everybody, not only the fan base, but also the team. They spend a ton of money to make sure everything is A++++ when it comes to the organization. That's true. Now, the choice of words was a bad one, but I would argue that the worst thing, but the more confusing and confounding thing that emerged yesterday, more so than the gods comment, which will follow Mitch Marner for a long time. Like, it just will. That's just how it works. Is that fair?
The front page.
The front page is exactly. But here's Austin Matthews, who was asked about Mitch Marner, and this is the thing that I find to be even more confusing.
Well, I mean, I think in my time here, you've learned, I've learned that, there's always a scapegoat, there's always a narrative, there's always something, and, we love Mitchie. He's a great teammate. He's a great friend and a competitor. And so, in the end, we're also human beings. So, we take on a lot as players, and rightfully so. So, when you see guys kind of go through stuff like that, it's hard on everybody, and you just try to support him and be there for him.
Being a professional athlete is very challenging, especially in a market like Toronto. But I would argue it's no different in Montreal with the Canadiens, or in New York with the Yankees, or in Boston with the Red Sox, or in New England with the Patriots. There's a lot of pressure. It just goes on and on and on. There's no scapegoating here. Mitch Marner didn't play well. That's why he's being criticized. No one's going after William Nylander. Because he played well in the games that he played. No one's going after Austin Matthews. He led them in the game, too. If Mitch Marner had performed up to his capabilities, not a scapegoat, he is a hero. And that's the difference. He's compensated very handsomely. People have a certain expectation for Mitch Marner's play. He didn't meet it. So, yes, there's going to be criticism, and it's valid criticism.
Look at the difference in markets. What are people in Boston saying about the Boston Bruins? Who are the players on that team that they're talking about right now?
Jeremy Swayman, David Pasternak, Brad Marchand, all of whom,
stop there.
Any market.
What do those players on the Boston Bruins represent? They're the best players on that team. Why? Because they were difference makers in that series. And that's the difference. You play in a market and you're a difference maker come playoff time, people are going to view you as gods. People are going to label you as superstars. People are going to idolize you. That's what happens. And you know what? Being an athlete is tough. Being a celebrity is even tougher. When you're combining the both, it makes it extremely difficult to live a life without criticism. Simple as that. But it comes with the territory. You want to get paid millions of dollars to play a sport that you love doing, that you're better at than most people can do? It comes with the territory. You want to play this type of sports in big markets? It comes with the territory. It's pretty simple. You can't have it every other way. There is a lot to be grateful for when you're a professional athlete. A lot. You live a great life. You get treated with royalty. You make a ton of money. You get enjoy all the experiences that you want because life has afforded you to do that. But when you don't do your job, you have to expect the criticism that comes with it. Simple as that. And in some markets, it's more criticism than others. But there's a reason why you are who you are in the market that you're in. Is because the market in you're in cares about who you are and the team you play for. And that's the job. That's the job requirement when you put on a Maple Leaf jersey. The job requirement is you're the most talked about person in the city. Why? Because people live and die blue and white in this city. It's simple as that. If that's too hard to accept, then don't play for this team. If that's too hard to accept, then go out and be a difference maker. And that's, again, when we're talking about scapegoating and putting criticism on a player, especially a guy like Mitch Marner, who has an expectation because of who he is and what he represents. When you're a complete non-factor in a series and your team loses a series that everyone is describing as hard fought and the difference of is the mistakes in this series were minimal. You know, the margin of errors were very thin. Well, just think about it. If your best players would have played better, and what the difference, what Toronto would be talking about versus what Boston would be talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And keep in mind, after game number 6, the head coach of the Boston Bruins came out and said that his best player needs to step up. And he did. And he scored the OT winner to get the Bruins into round 2. The idea that it's us against the world and it's the media against us, everyone's ganging up on us, they want us to fail, and they take pride and joy in it is utter nonsense. And that's this narrative that Auston Matthews was talking about that they're creating in their own minds.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with anyone but what's going on with the performance of this hockey team. And if they were able to succeed, then there would be no narrative. There would be no scapegoat. And I want to go back to scapegoat for a second, where Matthews is saying that Mitch Marner is the scapegoat, and that's how it goes here. And again, that's just not true. It's not. Matthews and Nylander missed time in this series. John Tavares is 34 years old. Their best player, who was in each and every game of that 7-game series against the Boston Bruins, is unquestionably Mitch Marner, who makes $10.9 million, who had as many points as Ilya Lyubushkin did in the series. Are we not supposed to have critiques of his play? Are you supposed to be, well, you know, we tried, we lost in overtime, can't really be critical of anyone. It's not about being a scapegoat. It's about being accountable. And that's what the Maple Leafs weren't yesterday. Instead, they choose to create this false narrative around people lining up and ganging up on them, which is just not the case. When you lose
ownership, man,
year after year, you're going to be critiqued. And is it coming to a crescendo now? Maybe more so than ever? Yes, because it's just another example of the loss.
20 Fingers, do you have that McKinnon clip ready to go? This is Nathan McKinnon, okay? 3 years ago when his team lost in the playoff series to the Vegas Golden Knights. Let's listen to Nathan MacKinnon react on the podium after they just finished losing a series.
There's always next year. It's all we talk about. I feel like, I mean, I'm going in my ninth year next year and I haven't won shit, so I'm just definitely motivated and I'm just, yeah, it just sucks, you know, losing four in a row.
Going into his ninth season and hasn't won crap. And people are asking him about what next year is going to look like. You know what happened 2 years later? They won the frickin' Stanley Cup. That's what happened. Because you had a guy that was sick and tired of answering questions of why they continue to lose. And here we are. This is a guy that's taking ownership. The guy that's taking ownership saying, we suck. We sucked. I don't care about excuses. I haven't won crap. Whatever we need to do to get better, go out and do it. Let's go out and do it because I'm sick and tired of losing. And here, yesterday, a lot of the message was, oh, we were close. We were close. We're right there. How can you say you're right there? This team, through seven games, went through so much drama with injuries and, you know, guys being available and not being available. Do you think that team was capable of going four rounds of dealing with that?
I do not know. I do not.
But here they are. They're saying this team hadn't scored more than two goals. They hadn't scored more than two goals in 13 of their last 14 games. How can you be that close?
It's just talking. There's nothing else to it. It's just words without any merit. And that's what we become accustomed to when the Maple Leafs are eliminated from the postseason. We'll hear from Keith Pelley, Brendan Shanahan, and Brad Treliving on Friday morning. And I'm very curious to see what emerges from that. Buster only will keep the positivity train rolling with Toronto Sports. The Jays are 16-19. Could changes be coming with their organization? We'll ask Buster that next. While the Toronto Maple Leafs have been eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, our lone hope here in the city's sports scene rests with the 16-19 Toronto Blue Jays, who lose 2 of 3 over the weekend to the Washington Nationals. Alek Manoah gets battered in the fifth inning in his return to the major leagues. A day off yesterday, and the Jays start a series against the hottest team in Major League Baseball, a team that has won 9 of its last 10 in the Philadelphia Phillies, who are first in the NL East. Should be a recipe for success. Let's welcome back to the show, little brief hiatus during the Maple Leafs playoff run, our good friend from ESPN. It's Buster Olney. Hey, Buster.
My condolences to you guys. It says something about my relationship with you that as I'm watching that series play out and Game 7 play out, that my first thoughts were to you guys. You know, I talk to you every week, and I'm like, oh, man, what a bummer.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a story in baseball, Buster, where a team every year loses the exact same way in the playoffs?
Well, first off, in baseball, for sure, because it was the Red Sox for 86 years, but me as a Vikings fan, okay, I can directly relate to everything that you're feeling. Because even if it starts to go well in the back of your mind, you're just anticipating at some point it's going to go badly, right? You just think for sure that it's going to go wrong. We were talking to Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager the other day before the Sunday night game. And he said that the whole time, once he was, you know, when the Leafs took the lead, he was like, oh, okay, maybe we got something. And he said from the moment that the Bruins tied the score, he's like, yeah, we're going to lose.
That's the mentality of Maple Leaf fans. And generally speaking, they're right. With Blue Jays fans, it's not exactly the most bright and optimistic tone either right now. And there has been some conversation amongst baseball media about the futures of guys like Atkins and John Schneider, if this continues to go the way it has. What's your read on how Blue Jays management is feeling about what's going on right now?
Yeah, and look, I have not talked to John Schneider, so I'm just going to be, you know, doing this from afar. But last week, when he started to speak with more urgency about, you know, enough, where he essentially was tamping down the talk of, well, you know, we'll figure it out or we'll eventually get there. And all of a sudden, the quotes coming from John were much more like, no, enough of that, right? No, we got to get it done now. And he changes the lineup and he moves Bichette down. You know, he puts Vladdy in a different spot. You could feel that. And I mean, the reality is that all of them have a lot at stake right now. This is the time. This is the theoretical window. And what we're seeing early this season is, you know, essentially more the same of what we saw at the end of last season. So you can understand when John started to ratchet that up last week that reflected, you know, probably at this point a larger anxiety that exists within the organization because everybody knows what's at stake. Everybody knows what they're seeing. And now it's, you know, it's up to the players and up to the staff to react to that. And it's ugly right now. And you mentioned, you know, the Phillies, look, they're not only the hottest team in baseball, they're the best team in baseball. You know, wow. I spent a few days around them, and they are rolling, and they are a deep team. They have an excellent rotation. They have that deep lineup, even without Trey Turner, who's out for 6 weeks after straining his hamstring the other day. They have an excellent bullpen. They got an excellent esprit de corps and a clubhouse culture. That, to me, you know, we can talk about the Dodgers being a great offense and the Braves being a great team. Phillies right now are the best team in baseball. That is not a good team for them to catch at this moment.
Wow, just what the Blue Jays need. Another series where they're probably not going to score many runs. Buster, it's been frustrating as a fan of this team to watch the carryover from last season and the struggle on offense. How much more patient should Blue Jays fans be, and when do you expect something to happen with this Blue Jays team, whether it's the change of a pitching or a hitting coach, whether it's, you know, bringing in a guy that can bring us be a spark to your offensive lineup? I mean, we're this time of year, we're not used to seeing trades in baseball.
Arise was traded, right?
We just saw Arise get traded to the Padres. So how much longer should Blue Jays fans wait?
I think that the Arise trade was a great example of a team looking at a month's worth of sample size. 20% of the season is in the books and saying, you know what, this is not working and we're going to go forward. And for the Blue Jays, let's face it, the reality is it's a year and a month. You know,
yep.
It's essentially the same group. And, you know, I was going to give you guys some insight in it. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, I work with a terrific researcher named Paul Embiakides. He was on my podcast last week, and he talked about Vladdy's struggles at the bottom half of the zone. Okay, typically when you guys think about hitters and, you know, their ups and their downs, you can focus on one part of the, you know, one pitch that is confounding them or one part of the zone, low and away. With Vladdy, what's been striking is that he has really struggled on anything in the lower half of the strike zone. The whole bottom half, if you're an opposing pitcher, you aim at that, you're going to have a good chance for success. Think about these numbers this year on pitches in the lowest half of the strike zone against Vladdy. He's batting 196 with a 315 slugging percentage, okay? A 282 on base percentage. Those are scary numbers because that means that essentially if you are an opposing team and you're coming in and you're game playing against Vladdy and he's doing that poorly, you're just going to keep going to the well over and over and over again. So, you know, whether it's Vladdy making an adjustment or the front office making an adjustment and go out and making an aggressive trade, which at this time of year typically costs, you know, retail plus 10%, they can be really expensive the way the Arise trade was for the Padres the other day. I do think you need to do something. That's why it really jumped out to me how aggressive John Schneider's words were, that they all sort of understand now they are moving toward the end of the plank. You know, they are right getting close to the precipice, which is why, you know, if you see what's going on with Vladdy, you see what's going on with the lineup, you see what's going on with Alek Manoah, at this point it's who's going to help us win today and forget all the niceties and just do what you can to win today's game, everything you can to do to win today's game, because they got to turn it around.
And quickly. And very quickly, because if they don't, they could very well be sellers ahead of the deadline. And they've got some attractive pieces, guys like Yusei Kikuchi, Danny Jansen, Jimmy Garcia has been great, and those guys would draw a lot of interest around Major League.
It's not crazy. At some point, that becomes a reality. Hembo, Paul Imbecile, the researcher I mentioned, you know, he said during spring training, and I poo-pooed him. I was like, I don't think so. He's like, you know who could be out on the market in midsummer would be Bo Bichette. Would make a lot of sense for the Dodgers. They need a shortstop, a long-term, you know, Mookie's playing well there now. They need a long-term solution. But look, the Blue Jays are 7.5 games out of first place already. It's clear the Orioles are the best team in the American League. The Yankees are a really good team. And to your point, Aaron, they got to turn that around now. To John Snyder's point, it's got to be now that they get this turnaround.
ESPN's Buster Olney is our guest. You mentioned the Dodgers. They have a guy who's pretty good at hitting. His name's Shohei Ohtani, who destroyed another ball last night. His 11th home run. He has 4 homers in his last 3 games. Becomes the first big leaguer to reach 11 home runs this season. I mean, Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and pretty formidable top of the order for the L.A. Dodgers. And if Bo Bichette goes there, I'm not sure I can watch baseball anymore. Although Bichette's been terrible to start this season. We know what his track record is. But as far as Ohtani goes, I mean, I guess he's just living up to any and all expectations that the Dodgers had for him, Buster.
Well, he's exceeding them. And I gotta think that at some point, the evaluators in all these organizations who looked at Ohtani as a hitter when he was coming over here and were saying at that time, and the majority of evaluators saying, yeah, he's an okay offensive player, but he's never going to be great. Like he's a guy who, yeah, he's a good hitter, but you know, he's got his limitations. Oh my God. I mean, was everybody so wrong? Now that he has his full focus on hitting, he's a strong candidate to win a triple crown. Wow. He's hitting .370. That's first in the majors. He has 11 home runs. That's first in the majors. He's 6th in RBI, not far behind the leader, Marcell Ozuna of the Braves. Guys, think about his numbers leading off innings this year. He's batting .579 with a .619 on base percentage and an OPS of .1263. You know, against right-handed pitching, he's got an OPS of .1310. It's ridiculous. It's video game numbers that he's putting up right now with how he's playing. And boy, you know, he's got that sweet spot batting behind Mookie and in front of Freddie Freeman. And every day, what a nightmare for opposing pitchers.
If only Yusei Kikuchi's sushi party worked as an attraction to bring him here to Toronto. Apparently wasn't enough.
Oh my goodness.
you finished with the word disaster. How much of a disaster was the Blue Jays' handling of Alek Manoah's return start to the majors? I mean, he got a lot of offensive help in that game. It's 6-1 going into the fourth inning. He's showing signs of struggles. He's at 90 pitches. And instead of letting him leave with a lead and feeling good about himself, they hang him out to dry in that inning. He gives up 5 runs, and he leaves the inning losing or trailing in that inning instead of leaving with the lead and coming out with a lot of positive mojo. Did you agree with the way they handled his first start back in the majors?
Look, I at this point, I'm kind of torn on how the Blue Jays should handle him, right? Because it feels like that since this whole thing began to pop up last year, They've been really polite, and they've been, you know, when he didn't want to go to the minor leagues, and then they're like, they didn't suspend him, and they didn't restrict him, and they're kind of bringing him along slowly, and they didn't take him off the roster at any point. They're allowing him to build up service time, and I hear you. In that moment, it probably would have been, good for him if they had been nice about it, but at some point, he's in the big leagues, and you got to trust him, and you just need him to be mediocre. They don't even need him to be great at this point with the quality of their rotation. They just need him to be just average, and he wasn't. And so, yes, I agree with you. There are ways that they could have handled that differently, but at some point, if Manoah's going to help them, they got to find that out. Like, they got to throw him into the deep end of the pool and not worry about niceties and see if he can sink or swim. And that felt like a case the other day. He was in a good position, and he's just got to perform better. And if he's not going to, they got to look for an alternative.
And just to respond to what Carlos said about the Blue Jays' handling of Manoah and when he was pulled, the Blue Jays' bullpen is absolutely dreadful right now. So the idea of pulling him for any one of those guys in the bullpen doesn't exactly seem too appetizing either. So there's a lot of problems with Toronto right now. The bullpen is at the top of the list. Manoah, I mean, he's their fifth starter. I don't think that there's a lot of expectations that he's going to be doing much for them anytime soon. So it's just ugly all around. And fortunately for the Jays, they get a matchup against the hottest team in baseball, the Philadelphia Phillies, tonight. But at least they do have Jose Berríos on the hill. Buster, great to have you back. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
All right, guys. Hang in there. Always fun to talk with you.
Likewise. That's ESPN's Buster Olney. Those Ohtani stats. Like, you have Betts and Ohtani on your team. It's unfair. These guys are unreal. Unreal this season. Just tearing the cover off the ball. Much like you at Hamilton Golf and Country Club on 18 yesterday. Just a bomb off the tee.
Yeah, and my 5-iron into the green, too.
It's true.
I had two sweet shots on 18.
If only we played from the red tees like James Duthie. We would have shot in the 60s. Jimmy Red Tees. He'll join us on Thursday.
Jimmy Red Tees.
Bob Wischusen.
He's not a big fan of us continuing to carve his golf.
No, it's true. And you know that next time we play with him, he won't miss a fairway. He'll shoot like 71. That's how it works with James Duthie. So we'll talk to Bob Wischusen, who was on the call last night for the Panthers and the Bruins. A surprising result that saw Boston pick up a 5-1 win over the Florida Panthers. On the other side, AK the Mentalist will return. And I'm going to tell you who I think the next head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs will be. That's next.
I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here over the next week. You may laugh, you may roll your eyes, but here's exactly what's going to happen, because they're going to win tomorrow.
The Leafs have won the game! Nice! Jumping it in!
They're going to win on Thursday.
Willie Nylander! We're going to Boston again, buddy!
It's going to be a Game 7 loss in overtime.
Comes right in front, they score!
And the game-winning goal will end the Maple Leaf season.
And they'll come out like, man, what an effort.
Love the fight of our team, you know. Tough circumstances, being down like we were. The group pulled together to give us a chance.
We really took it to Boston. We were down 3-1.
I think we just stuck together, everyone buying in, doing what we need to do. Give ourselves opportunity to fight back and great chance to win the series.
Look at us. Look how resilient we are.
All right, so that's what was said last Monday, and we know how it played out. AK the Mentalist was correct. And AK the Mentalist is going to take another shot here at the next week in Maple Leaf land. And this is not a prognostication on Mitch Marner's future, which is still at least a number of weeks away. I think the future of Sheldon Keefe is in focus here. Can you take a guess as to my guess for the next head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs? And it's not Sheldon Keefe.
Wow. Well, I'm going to say that Craig Berube is too obvious for
you. It is. That is too obvious.
So I'm going to go with Joel Quenneville.
No, it is not Joel Quenneville. Not yet reinstated by the NHL to coach in the National Hockey League. My prediction, based on maybe a little bit of insight, that the next head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs will be Daryl Sutter. My prediction. My prediction. You may laugh. I hope. Keep laughing. Keep laughing.
I'm going to keep laughing because if I'm wrong about this, you could laugh at me as much as I just laughed at that. How the hell do you think Daryl Sutter?
Mm-hmm.
How the hell do you think these players that need to be pampered the way that they are going to play under Daryl Sutter?
I'm so glad you said that. I think what the idea has to be with the next head coach, and maybe it is Berube, maybe it is Quenneville, maybe it's McClellan, maybe it's my pick, Daryl Sutter. You need a change in that mentality. There's no more players coaches. Sheldon Keefe, that iteration of what's been going on here for too long has to end, and you need a hard ass, a disciplinarian, the most curmudgeonly
bitter old man that you could find, someone who just lay into these guys night after night. We know the relationship, and I'm not admittedly certain of where it stands between Tree Living and Sutter. I mean, Tree Living and Sutter worked together for a long time in Calgary. Mm-hmm. But it's just my opinion that that's the type of coach they need. And we know that, I mean, you know, Shanahan, and I don't know what the Shanahan and Sutter relationship is either. But I don't believe Sheldon Keefe will be back, because I think when you say, and Chris Johnston says, that the Mitch Marner no trade clause may very well factor into any type of decision with his future, because if he nixes any trade, if he says, I'm not going anywhere, they can't bring the same band back together. So the only move you can make is by removing Keefe. And that's, I think, what's going to happen this week. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if that new coach, maybe it is Daryl Sutter, is there on Friday in that press conference with Tree Living, Shanahan, and the new CEO, Keith Pelley, sitting there together. This is our new collection of talent at the management level and the coaching level. This is where we go forward. And what Sutter or Quenneville or McClellan or Berube would represent is a closer, the Mariano Rivera. We are trying to finish the job, at least make a legitimate playoff run here. And under Sheldon Keefe, it hasn't worked. They keep losing these game sevens, and they keep losing these elimination games. They keep losing in the same way in which they can't score. You need to go in a different direction, and that's the direction I think they will go in. That crusty old SOB.
Look, I'm not going to call you crazy for suggesting
it's
that.
AK no. the mentalist. I said the Leafs would come back 3-1 and lose in overtime in game seven. That was a hot take. The odds of that were very long. And then maybe the Daryl Sutter odds are long as well. I'm just connecting the Tree Living Sutter dots. Again, I don't know their relationship at this point in time. They're both relieved of their duties in Calgary. So I'd be curious to know what type of conversations are being had at the top of MLSE. Now, it's quick in that the season ended, two, three days ago now. Yeah. Are they really going to introduce the new head coach on Friday? Maybe that might be a stretch. But I'd be very curious to know who's being discussed in the upper echelons of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I wonder if Daryl Sutter is a name that is being considered, in that he's won 2 Stanley Cups with the Kings, he's had a ton of success, a Jack Adams Trophy 3 years ago.
You don't need to explain to me his resume.
His resume is amazing.
His impact that he could have. Like I said, I'm not going to call you crazy for suggesting that, but I think you can call yourself Icky the Mentalist, but you're speaking like a fan. Because that's what the fan wants.
The fan wants Daryl Sutter?
The fan wants a hard-ass coach with these teams.
Maybe.
Or with this group. And I don't think with the way the game has evolved, I don't think that those type of coaches can have too much success in today's game anymore. Because it's a player's control. Why do you think we have so many coaches fired year after year? The lifeline for a coach in the NHL nowadays is what, 2 years?
So what would the difference be with Berube to Sutter? Like, as far as the mentality, Berube, I guess you played for Berube, you could speak to it. Is he a player's coach, or is he one of those hard asses?
To me, Craig Berube was always a great communicator.
Okay,
because he gave you brutal honesty, and he didn't do it in a jackass type of way. He did it very honestly and very bluntly. And that's what I always appreciated with him and respected him for, is he wasn't one of those guys that just said what you wanted to hear because it would make you happy. He was one of those guys that said what you needed to hear because it was going to make you better. And that's what I always, and I've always said, he was one of my favorite coaches to play for. And I wish I would have was able to play for him longer, but they moved on from him and me both at the end of the season. But in my time with him, that's what I really respected, is the fact that, look, this guy isn't a big X's and O's guy. He's not going to come in with some new system that's going to change the way the game is played. He preaches structure. But he also preaches accountability.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty good to me.
But again, like, I'm not saying that Berube isn't a strong candidate, because there is a lot of people that are speculating that if the job opens up, he would be a strong candidate. I just don't think Daryl Sutter fits that description of a coach that you need to push this team over the top. Because let's be honest, you got guys like William Nylander and Austin Matthews that are committed long term here. Do you think those players there are going to respond to a demand from a coach like Daryl Sutter?
I would hope so.
Not under this leadership, they're being paid like the top five players in the NHL. They had that in Mike Babcock.
Like Babcock, it is kind of a similar idea. Yes.
How did that work out?
I mean, well, but again, Babcock was there at the beginning of the rise, right?
How is that going to change right now? Players have all the control.
Well, I mean, they don't have all the control. They don't have the control of who the next head coach will be. And I don't know. I am speculating here.
But, I know you are.
But they.
And I said it's not crazy.
Yes.
I think that's saying that.
When it comes to a shakeup of the core, and it might not actually be on the ice, because I'm not sure they'll be actually able to trade any of these guys. Not that they want to trade Matthews or Nylander. If they could trade John Tavares, I'm sure they'd
love to. This group of players can barely handle criticism.
That's exactly my point.
That the media, you know.
Think about how popular that hiring would be. People would love that. Love
1,000,000%
love
people
it.
Toronto would love that because that's what they're craving.
Exactly.
But again, that's what I keep saying. When was the last time the Maple Leafs listened to the fans?
Yes.
About what they want to do.
Well, we'll see what AK the Mentalist has in store within the next couple weeks. And I just hope AK the Mentalist is right, because Chrissy, maybe cue up Carlos' reaction to my initial prognostication. My prediction. There you go. And if I'm right, that will be played nonstop, every single day. But we'll see if I am. We'll talk to Bob Wischusen, who was calling the Panthers and the Bruins game last night. And we'll get his thoughts on my New York Jets as well. A team that's poised to make a major run in the NFL this season. That's next. Hour 3 continues. You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050. Aaron Korolnik, Carlo Koliakovo. Last night was game 1, second round in the Eastern Conference. Saw the Florida Panthers hosting the Boston Bruins. We just saw Boston for 7 games here in Toronto. Did not really think they had a chance against the Panthers. So, of course, they go out and beat them 5-1. Brandon Carlo scored. Mason Lowry scored. Morgan Geeky scored. Justin Brazeau scored, so all the cast of characters you'd expect to score for the Boston Bruins. Let's welcome in the man who is on the call for ESPN. He is Bob Wischusen with us here on First Up. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent, thank you. Was your expectation heading into this series that Florida would take care of business in a swift fashion, or were you looking at the Bruins as someone who could really give the Panthers a run?
No, I knew that Mason Lowry and Justin Brazeau and Brandon Carlo were going to be the goal scorers last night.
I mean, it was obvious. Right,
you know, yes, with the extensive goal scoring resumes that those guys have in the NHL. I was as curious as anyone to see what the Bruins had in the tank after, you know, a rivalry 7-game series that goes to overtime on Saturday night against a team that is really good, really deep, and really rested. And, I mean, they were... And to fall behind 1-0. And then to have that immediate response a little over a minute later, and then just to freight train them. I mean, it certainly helps when you have, a goaltender that literally looks like a brick wall right now back there behind you. But at the same time, I did not see that coming. I don't think any of us did.
Bob, do you think the relief that has been released from Boston based on how they got through the first round right now, with all the talk going into game 7 again and maybe being the first team in sports history to lose back-to-back a series after being up 3-1, do you think that release that they felt last night has allowed this team to play a little bit more freely, which is why you saw them play as well as they did last night?
I would think it would be human nature, sure, right? Like, there was plenty of speculation that had they lost to the Leafs on Saturday night, that might have been the end for Jim Montgomery. That, the coach might have gotten fired. And he comes out and you know, has no problem, like, in a press conference calling out Pastrnak. And then Pastrnak responds and scores the game-winning goal. And afterwards says, yeah, if I was the coach, I would have said the same thing. I would have called me out, too. So, I mean, it did seem like last night at one point Jeremy Swayman was laughing in the crease after a giant scramble in front of his net. It definitely seems like, having gotten through the first round the way that they did, now they're playing the team that they lost to in really embarrassing fashion with the blown lead in round one of last year's playoffs. So, you know, maybe there's that revenge element or wanting to exercise that demon as well. But, I mean, you know, like you said, to be a 140-point team nearly last year and lose in the first round, and to be close to a 110-point team this year, and if they had blown another 3-1 lead, there has to be a little bit of a feeling of, okay, like we got past the stage that we will never be able to live down. Now we can just go play.
Our guest is Bob Wischusen from the NHL on ESPN. Boston beating Florida 5-1 in game one last night in Florida, game two on Wednesday night. And we saw Jeremy Swayman against the Leafs, Bob. The guy is, you mentioned it, he's a brick wall. He was unbelievable. Unbelievable as well in game number one. And I was thinking about this last night, like the depth in goal for the American side, even looking at the Olympics in a couple of years. You have Hellebuck. Thatcher Demko's an American. Jeremy Swayman's an American. He's been absolutely sensational in this playoff run. I mean, no lack of stars. And I guess it sucks that Demko got hurt and Connor Hellebuck was exited really quickly from the playoffs by Colorado. But in goal, the United States, and we know what the Russians have in goal, though they won't be part of the Olympics, we don't believe, at least at this point. I mean, Canada could use a couple of those guys. Maybe you want to send a few our way? What do you think?
Well, obviously it's our national sport now.
That's right. Enjoy.
Canada, right? But clearly, the on the American side of the border, hockey has taken over. So, yeah, I embrace it with open arms.
Right.
No, you're right. I mean, the depth of talent is amazing. And what Swayman is doing right now, Linus Ullmark on probably 25 other teams in the NHL would be, if not a clear-cut number one, in the argument to be their number one. And these guys split the season. I guess at some point we may see Linus Ullmark get a game during the playoffs. Maybe. Ooh. But, you know, it is funny, even after game seven, there were plenty of people even in Boston that have covered the Bruins regularly in the prognostication business that were thinking that Ullmark might have started last night. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're sitting there going, you know, that would be the ultimate example of, like, modern-day analytics playing into a decision that when we were all growing up 20, 25, 30 years ago, there'd be no question what the decision would have been. And ultimately, there was no question for Jim Montgomery of what the decision was, of who was going to be in net last night. Because, I mean, when you've got a guy playing like this, don't mess with happy. Like,
yeah.
Don't try to find a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. Let him go play. And I can't imagine until he has some kind of a real clunker that they're going to make any kind of a change, because right now he is as much as any player can be in the zone. I mean, he's just, unconscious right now.
Yeah, and there was people speculating on the broadcast yesterday that Swayman has never played 6 games in a row in his career, and yesterday was his 6th, and people were saying, well, maybe Ullmark comes into game 2. It's like, what? How is this even a conversation right now?
We were having a conversation. I was talking, because obviously, working with Ryan Callahan, spent a lot of time with Brian Boucher, before he moved over to Turner. We were partners for a couple of years, and I've had this conversation with these guys about the concept of, like, analytics and load management, which you just don't see in the NHL, right? Like in the NBA, I remember when the NBA a few months ago came out with that, 65 game threshold to be award eligible or whatever. And JJ Redick, I remember going on one of our shows on ESPN, I think it was First Take, and basically said, we've talked about this in the NBA with how the game has changed. It's just completely unrealistic to ever expect star players to play 82 games again. It's just never going to happen. It's basically impossible. So let's come up with this threshold where these awards will now be given to guys who play at least 65 games. And I remember thinking, it's not even a conversation. Like, you can't even debate about whether or not a guy can play 82 games. It's just a given in the NBA that they can't do it because the game has changed. I mean, flip on an NHL game from 25 or 30 years ago. You're going to tell me the NHL hasn't changed? That the game isn't bigger, faster, stronger, more high-impact play? And yet, it's not even a discussion in the NHL about whether or not guys are going to play. Right? Star players, if they are healthy, they will play 82 games. And if they're not healthy, they'll sit out the games they have to recover from injury. But they're never rested healthy, ever. And so, like with Jeremy Swayman, I mean, I remember actually Ryan Callahan sent me a soundbite, John Tortorella. Torts put it perfectly. He was asked about how he was managing his goaltenders. And he kind of looked at it from 30,000 feet and said something to the effect of, I think we've gotten to a place in sports where we now talk guys into being tired. Because the analytics guys, like, descend upon, well, you've never played this many minutes. And, you know, hey, second time through the lineup as a pitcher, you know, it's better if you get out of the game in the fifth inning. And goalies don't play 70 games anymore. Now they play 55. And he said, you know, these guys are told this in every sport coming up. And it's almost like they think they should be tired because we're telling them they should be tired. Jeremy Swayman doesn't look tired. Like, dude, play the dude. Why would you not play a guy every single game that's performing like this until he comes to you and says, Coach, I'm out of gas. I just can't do this anymore.
Bob, we got to mix in a little New York Jets talk. A couple of passionate New York Jets fans on this radio show. My colleague
fake,
here.
Hang in there. Fake New York Jets.
Very real. Very. Oh, I think it's going to be better very, very soon. Perhaps as early as this year. The Buffalo Bills, their wide receiver core is absolutely dreadful. They have nobody out there. The Jets locked and loaded with a healthy Rodgers, Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams. Maybe I'm trying to talk myself into it. What are your expectations of what the Jets will do this year, Bob?
My expectations are I will have the opportunity to broadcast an Aaron Rodgers pass attempt this year.
I hope so.
Pass completion?
Yeah.
I'll take the attempt first. We didn't even get that last year. Then we'll move on to a completion, then maybe even a touchdown. No, I think that obviously it all begins and ends with the quarterback, right? You see that on every team. Even as great of a story as Joe Flacco was last year, came out of nowhere, and he was the only backup quarterback that got his team to the playoffs. And then what happened to him in the first round? They got waxed. They were gone, and the cream rises to the top. And who was, you know, still standing at the end? Teams with legitimate franchise great quarterbacks. They have to have Aaron Rodgers healthy as a jumping-off point. If we take that as a given, they have a couple of spots on the roster that I think they would still like to address, an interior offensive lineman maybe, or safety. I mean, the kind of things that maybe you can, you know, pick up off the scrap heap somewhere and find someone that's serviceable. But at all of the real money positions, they look really good, especially a quarterback if he stays healthy. So, yeah, they will go into the season, I think, having every bit the chance to win their division as anybody else in their division. And, you know, I've been around the organization since 1996, and I can count on one hand the number of times that they've even gone into a season believing that they're as good, if not better, than the other three teams in their division. So fingers crossed Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and we finally get to see what they should look like and will look like with him.
The NFL schedule released on Thursday. Until then, it's a beautiful sound.
Nice.
Thank you, Bob.
I love the fact you guys are keeping hope alive north of the border.
We are. We are. We love the Jets here. We love.
No hope, Bob.
We love the Jets. We love the Jets. We love you. Thank you. Thank you for the. Thank you for the time, Bob.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. That's Bob Wischusen. Does it all on ESPN. Oh, the Jets are so good. It's great to have an NFL team. I didn't have an NFL team for the first like 32 years of my life. 33 years of my life. Now I have a team that I am passionate. I'm a diehard fan of.
The first team you choose is love the New York Jets.
Love them. Wow. Mostly out of spite for you.
That is pathetic.
Did 20 Fingers and I pick the Jets to be fans of just to spite you? Yes, we did. But now we love.
Did.
Now we love them.
Bring
right,
it on,
Chrissy?
Buddy. Bring it
Chrissy's
on.
Nodding his head in agreement.
I know what it feels like to be a fan
of the Browns? Yeah, we know.
No, of a team that gets their heart broken every year. I mean, we live it here in Toronto, and I don't get heartbroken by the Maple Leafs because I'm not a fan of the Maple Leafs. I'm a supporter of the Maple Leafs. But the Buffalo Bills, yeah, like it's been torture to be a fan for them for a long time. 20 years it took before we made the playoffs again. Now we've got this nice run because we've got a quarterback finally, and we just can't make the right decisions to get over the hump.
It's a shame.
And beat Patrick Mahomes.
Nobody's really done that over the last 5-6 years
anyways.
Tom Brady has. And now he's getting roasted on Netflix. So how things have changed. This hour of First Up was brought to you by LeaseBusters. They'll rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters. Heroic maybe. Helpful. Totally. People would love to take over your car lease or your lease relief. Go to LeaseBusters.com. We'll talk to Ian Mendez from The Athletic in Ottawa. Big draft lottery tonight for the Sens. Sounds like they're on the verge of naming a new head coach as well. Get to that in about 10 minutes, but some of our conversation with TSN hockey insider Chris Johnston, all that to come in hour 4.